Chapter 46. Kip followed Liv Danavis through a narrow hall and then out to a lift. His head was still a whirl, and his emotions were a riot that seemed not completely internal, as if somehow additional emotions were being pressed onto him. It felt alien. Maybe it was just seeing Liv. He'd known she was at the Chromeria, and he'd hoped to see her ever since he'd known he was coming here, but actually seeing her was different. Master Danavis had shared many of Liv's letters with Kip, so in some ways it didn't feel like it had been 2 full years. But she'd been 15 then. He'd been 13. Apparently, he'd grown since then because he was finally taller than she was. Of course, he was still also about 3 times wider than she was. If anything, she was even more beautiful than she had been. As she led him through a hall and finally to a lift, she didn't say anything. Kip was glad for the silence. He didn't think he could have found his tongue. An odd, quiet joy and peace settled over him at seeing her. He remembered when she was 14 years old and the rumour had run around town that she was going to be betrothed to Ged, the Alcaldessa's son. Shortly thereafter, she'd left for the Chromeria. Kip had been relieved. She'd seemed too good for little Recton, but though he was sure she hadn't thought of him since, he'd missed her. She'd been like the sun passing overhead, and he'd turned his face as she passed, warmed by her presence, but never daring to hope for more. When Master Danavis had shared that Liv was having a hard time with some girl at the Chromeria, Kip had wanted to leave immediately and kill the offender, then come home. Seeing her wavy hair swish and bounce around her shoulders as she led him was like standing in the sunlight again after a long winter. Kip didn't want words. Once he opened his big mouth, he'd surely spoil everything. He just watched her walk, hiking up his own pants gracelessly, as she strode ahead purposefully, at home, at ease, in command of her environment. "I think I'm lost," Liv said. She looked to each side, down halls that looked exactly the same. She bit her lip. Eyes locked on that full, slightly moist lip, Kip gulped. "Kip," she said. "No, never mind. Of course you wouldn't." She headed off again, and Kip followed. Liv had turned into a woman in the time she'd been away. She was as slender as he was fat. Her eyes large, lucid brown, her skin smooth and clear, where his was cursed with pimples around his neck and jaw, as his beard was only just coming in. Thank Orholm, at least her chest was bigger than his. Kip barely glanced there, though, and now as he followed her, he barely looked at her body. Her skirt did swoosh back and forth in a most pleasing manner as she walked, revealing slim, well-turned calves, but aside from a glance or two, or maybe 3, Kip glanced again. 4. Aside from that, he didn't look at her the way he'd look at some other beautiful woman. It just didn't seem respectful. 5. She stopped when they got into the lift. "I just realized," she said, laughing at herself, "that I have no idea where I'm supposed to take you. Tell you what, you can come to my room until I get this figured out. If you're like I was after the threshing, you'll probably need to go straight to bed, right?" Kip wasn't sure how he hadn't noticed before, but he was tired. He felt as if someone had taken the bottle of his energy and shaken it all out. He nodded his head. "Don't feel like talking?" she asked, giving him a little grin. It was the kind of grin you gave a little child who'd missed nap time and was fighting to stay up to get dessert. But Kip couldn't even summon the passion to despair at seeing that indulgent grin on her. "I'm cute to her." "Cute. Ugh." She set the counterweights on the lift, paused for a moment. She must have been surprised how much weight she needed to add to account for Kip, and added more. In moments they were speeding up the tower, passing other students, going both up and down. They stopped and stepped into a wide lobby area that dimpled out to one of the clear tubes that connected the central tower to all the others. Kip looked at Liv, eyebrows up. "My apartments are over in yellow. Yellow's in the middle of the spectrum, so bichromes and polychromes include yellow more often than other colours, so the yellow tower has more bichrome apartments. They don't have the space for those in the prisms tower. Are you afraid of heights?"
"Not usually," Kip said uneasily.
"Oh, so you can talk."
"I can fall too," he mumbled.
"You'll be fine, I promise.
she said. She walked out into the tube. It was four paces across and enclosed with blue Luxin so thin it was almost clear. The bottom of the walkway was thicker blue, reinforced with thin bars of yellow. It looked impossibly thin. As Kip had seen from far, far below, the walkway attached to the prism's tower only at two places, on the east side and here on the west. After going straight out about halfway to the green tower that was directly west of the prism's tower, this walkway met a great, almost clear Luxin circular walkway. From that circle there were spokes out to each of the six towers. Liv led Kip out to one of those intersections between circle and spokes, the point farthest from any support. She jumped up and down. "See, totally safe," she laughed. "Now you try it."
"I don't know," Kip said.
If he could ever overcome his fear, the view from up here was magnificent. Of course, it was hard to look at mere magic towers when he had Liv right here.
"Okay," he said weakly. He didn't want to let her down.
"Of course, if I break this spindly walkway, I'll be letting us both down. The quick way." Trying to be a good sport, Kip hopped, a little landing as lightly as possible on his toes and absorbing all the shock in his knees.
"Oh, seriously," Liv said.
Kip sighed and jumped so high he thought he was going to touch his head on the canopy. As he landed, he heard a loud crack. He threw his hands out, looking for something to grab, his heart seizing up. He was about to throw himself at the handrail when he saw Liv's face. She laughed and covered her mouth.
"I am so sorry," she said. "I shouldn't have. It's kind of a tradition for new students, and the prison wanted me to give you the whole experience."
Kip looked at her hands. They seemed to be clenched around something invisible. He tightened his eyes, and, sure enough, she had a bar of superviolet Luxin snapped in her hands. Kip chuckled. It only sounded a little forced.
"Give me the traditional mop, would you? I think I left a traditional paddle."
She laughed.
"Thanks for being a good sport. If it makes you feel better, I almost fainted when my magister did it with our whole class. Come on, it's just a little farther now."
They walked together around the spindly circle, then turned toward the yellow tower. The yellow tower had been at the back right when Kip had entered the great yard, so he hadn't really seen it. Now it loomed both above and below.
"I think my eyes are full," Kip said. "What? I've seen too many amazing things today. Either this is just not as impressive, or I've lost my ability to be amazed. Because to me this looks like a plain yellow tower. No flames, no jewels, no twisty movement."
The tower was luminous, but otherwise it looked like cloudy yellow glass, translucent but not transparent. Maybe it was hard to see because the sun was going down beside the tower. Liv smiled. He didn't know how he'd forgotten her dimples.
"The yellow is amazing because it's made entirely of yellow Luxin."
"And the others aren't?" Kip said, not understanding. He blinked.
"I mean, they're not made of their own coloured Luxin?" "No, no, no. The others have magical facades built over traditional building materials. The yellow is made entirely of yellow."
From his admittedly brief instruction with the prism, Kip thought that yellow was used like magical lanolin or something. It nourished other Luxin, but otherwise degraded back into light easily.
I thought yellow was kind of a bad choice for a building material, being unstable and all."
Kip was just remembering why he had been keeping his mouth shut. The more he talked with Liv, the more natural it would be for him to talk about home, and the more unnatural for him not to say anything about home. The moment they went there, he was going to have to tell Liv her father was dead, and the pleasant ease of being in her company would be shattered. She would go from this bright, glowing, dimpled young woman to a bereaved orphan.
"It is a bad choice," Liv said. "That's why this is so amazing."
She pulled him toward the tower's entrance. Suddenly Kip didn't know if he wanted to leave the solidity of the blue-yellow spindles. "Sure, a minute ago I was worried to step out on these, and now I don't want to leave."
"Yellow is usually the least stable Luxin. It shimmers right back into light at the least movement, like water boiling away in a moment. That's why they call it bright water. But do you remember when that harper played a few years ago back in Recton, and he stopped between every song to retune his harp?"
Kip nodded. "It didn't seem to make any difference to me." Dangerous ground talking about anything back home, but if he could keep her talking until he collapsed from exhaustion, He might avoid telling her the news for one more day.
Liv said, "The thing was, he could tell when his harp was even a fraction out of tune. No one else could, though. There are people who can do that with light. To make Luxon of any colour, you have to hit the right note within the colour or the Luxon won't form. If you're only approximately on pitch, the Luxon is much more likely to fail. You can cover some mistakes with more will, but you need someone really special to do work like this."
"Does this have something to do with superchromats?" Kip asked. It felt like he was finally starting to put together some pieces.
"Yes." She seemed surprised that he'd heard of that. "You're not really going to stand out there all night, are you?"
"Oh." Kip followed her into the tower.
"Superchromats can see finer gradations in colours than most people."
"Are you one?" Kip asked.
"Mm-hmm. About half of all women are."
"But not that many men."
"There are only 10 male superchromats in the entire Chromaria."
"Ah, thus Mistress Hag calling Kip a freak."
"That doesn't seem fair," Kip said. "What does fair have to do with it? Because you're blue-eyed, you'll be able to draft more than I can. It's not a matter of fair."
Kip frowned. "So you've got to be a superchromat to make yellow stay?"
"Short answer, yes. In truth, even superchromacy has degrees to it."
"You took that superchromacy test and there were maybe 100 blocks with fine gradations. Imagine there were 1,000 blocks with the gradations of colour that much finer. To make solid yellow that will stay, you'd have to pass that test and then have the control to draft yellow in that tight, tight spectrum. The result, though, is the strongest of any Luxon."
"Can you do it?" Kip asked.
"No."
"Ah, that was probably a rude question, huh?" Kip asked, wrinkling his face. "I'm the last person here who's going to hold the minutiae of tower etiquette against you."
"Which is a yes."
"Yes," she said, smiling. "Why were dimples so beautiful anyway?" "I still can't believe you're the Prism's nephew, Kip."
"You're not the only one," Kip said. So Gavin had been right. They all did pause before they said nephew. He guessed it should have felt better than hearing that he was a bastard all the time. It didn't. They got on another lift and went down. Apparently there was some sort of order of precedence for who got what rooms. When they got into Liv's rooms, Kip was surprised. It was not only large, but it was a suite of rooms and facing the sunset. This had to be the kind of room most drafters would kill for.
"I just moved here," Liv said apologetically. "I'm a bichrome. Barely. I'm sure you're exhausted. You can sleep in my bed."
Kip looked at her, flabbergasted, sure that she wasn't saying what he thought she was saying, trying not to let his expression say anything at all.
"I'll sleep in the next room, silly.
These new carpets are so thick I can sleep on them like a Parian." Kip swallowed.
"No, I didn't think you were... I was thinking I shouldn't take your bed.
I should sleep in the next room."
"You're my guest, and you've got to be exhausted. I insist."
I don't want to get your bed all dirty. I'm sweaty and gross from the testing." Kip was looking at her bed. It was beautiful. Everything here was beautiful. At least they'd been treating her well.
"The thresher does that to people. I'll get you a basin and you can sponge off a little before you pass out. But really, I insist."
Liv disappeared into the next room. Kip felt a lump growing in his throat. He hadn't said anything so far about her father, but he could practically feel the subject growing between them. Liv came back in the room with steaming hot water, a sponge, and a thick towel. She set them down and then sat in a chair, facing away from Kip.
"You don't mind if I sit here and chat while you wash, do you?" she asked. "I won't turn around, swear."
Of course he minded. She'd turn around when he was half naked and run screaming from the room for Orholm's sake. It was one thing for someone to know you were rotund, but it was something else entirely for them to see your fat rolls. At the same time, he was her guest and she hadn't asked anything else of him, and he'd been rude.
"So, Kip, how's my father? You haven't said anything about home."
For a long moment, Kip couldn't say anything. "Just start talking, Kip. Once you start, you'll be able to tell her everything."
"You're sighing," Liv said. "Is something wrong?"
"You know how the satrap would send messengers to Recton every year, asking for levies?"
"Yes,"
Liv said, her voice rising more with concern than asking a question.
You can turn around, I'm not naked.
She turned.
When Satrap Haradul's son Rask took power, he declared himself king. He sent another messenger. The town sent that one away empty-handed too, so he decided to make an example of us.
Kip heaved a deep breath.
They killed everyone, Liv. I'm the only one who got away.
My father?
What about my father? He was trying to save people. But Liv, they completely surrounded the town. No one got out.
You got out?
She didn't believe him. He could see it on her face.
I was lucky. My father is one of the most talented drafters of his generation. Don't tell me that you made it out and he didn't. They had drafters and mirror men, Liv, and I watched the Del Clara family get run down, all of them. The whole town was on fire. I watched Ram and Issa and Sanson die. I watched my mother die. I don't care about your drug-addled mother. I'm talking about my father. Don't you tell me he's dead. He's not, damn you, he's not.
Liv left the room in a whirlwind and slammed the door behind her. Kip stared at the door, his shoulders slumped, tears that he didn't even understand in his eyes. Well, that went well.